This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under JMB Reed. Mask of Guilt, Mask of Illumination, Book 1 is out. We all wear masks, some of us to hide our guilt. Lady Finari, lost in the malaise of depression, finds purpose with a group of all-women thieves, the Crack Gems. Intrigue, romance, betrayal, and adventure swirls around her in this epic fantasy tale. Today, I'm joined by Mark Starling. He is the author of The Elements, Silver Coin Saga, Book 1. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I was fantastic, but then I turned my fans off so we'd have good sound quality.
Oh, no.
So we have to get through this interview fast because it is heating up in my bed, in my office here.
Yep, no worries.
So, anyways, I always like to start things off with a fun question or two, and since I'm in the middle of the heat wave, I have to know, do you like summers, Mark? Because right now, I don't.
So, okay, I love mountain summers. How's that?
Mountain summers are nice.
So I'm a motorcycle enthusiast, so there is a point when you're riding a motorcycle that when you're in the hot, it's like a convection oven. So normally we have to deal with wind chill. Mm-hmm. It goes the other way, too. Once it hits a certain temperature, it gets hotter as you ride.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Didn't know that, no. I used to live in New Mexico, and we were like in a desert valley, but there were mountains like 5 minutes away. Like you could just like, it's like flat ground. Suddenly a mountain just rears up out of the earth. There's no like foothills or anything.
Well, I'm in the foothills. So I live at 6,300 feet.
Okay.
So we laugh at the people in Denver that claim that they live at altitude. Yeah. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah. But it was nice going up there into the mountains when it got hot.
Yes.
Cause I mean, I'm complaining about hitting like in the hundreds today, but that was actually very normal where I used to live. But we had swamp coolers, which are amazing things in the desert.
Exactly. And you get unused to the hot real quick.
Yeah. So anyways, let's talk about your books and your writing. So, Mark, how long have you wanted to be an author?
2016. So I was supporting a friend of mine, Doug. He wanted to be an author. And so the local writing group, Pikes Peak Writers, had a thing in February called Write Your Heart Out, where they kind of demonstrated or previewed what was coming up in their annual conference. And so I went with him to that, you know, to be supportive, good friend. And so we got done with it, and I was impressed. I was very impressed with the content that I saw. And I asked him, so are you going to the conference? And he was kind of waffling. He was like, what if I go with you? And so I went to the conference, and I for 4 days, I sat through sessions and exercises and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, I can do this. I can write a book. And I tried. And, oh, it was a dumpster fire. So then I completely trashed it and started again. And that was like a train wreck hitting a burning garbage truck. So I was like, okay, I need to figure out how to actually structure a story and what dialogue was. And there were these things that people kept talking about. I have no idea what it was. I was like, what is a beat? I'm familiar with music, but not so much in a story. So I pretty much spent most of 2017, 2018, figuring out how to write stories, and then started my first book, actual book, in 2019, and that was the Silver Coin Saga, The Elements.
Okay.
And that came out last July.
I have interviewed like over 100 authors at this point, and none of them got their start by going with their friend to a writer's conference. That is a unique one.
And it like the hook got in me, right? And so I had the stars in my eyes, and I was like, I could do this. And so now that I figured out how to story structure, I can do this. So, yeah, I'm working on my third novel now.
And, awesome.
Yeah, it's the second book in the Silver Coin Saga series, The Animals. And I'm hoping, well, actually, I talked with my publisher this morning, and we're shooting for an August 10th completion.
Awesome. So I had a question. What was that question? Oh, well, we'll move on because I am blanking on what the question was. So let's talk about The Elements. It appears to be a sort of a fantasy martial art novel. Is that correct?
Yep. It's in the wuxia genre, which is basically magic-powered martial arts.
Awesome. So tell us a bit about the characters, the story. You know, what makes your book interesting?
So, well, I mean, obviously it's interesting because it's magic-powered martial arts. I mean, how cool is that? But basically, you know, I'm a big fantasy guy. I started with, you know, obviously with Tolkien, and then that bridged me into David Eddings, Robert Jordan, a little bit of Brandon Sanderson, Dennis McKiernan.
Wait, you know. Did you go from, like, Tolkien to Eddings?
So I went, let's see, no.
Okay, because that's actually what I did. I went Tolkien and then into Eddings. So I was like, oh, that's weird.
So I was an early reader, and so I read The Hobbit when I was 11, fifth grade, and did a book report on it. And
yeah, that's about when I read that.
Everybody kind of laughed because they, you know, it had lots of funny words that I wanted to talk about. You know, it's really instead of pants, they were talking about breeches and things like that. And that was, so I'm going to date myself, so I'm old. So 1981. And so that was also the same year because I did the book report, right? You know, and now I'm kind of feeling some gray.
Yeah.
I will talk in my aged voice now.
Yeah.
But because I did the book report, there was a friend who was in the back that I had no idea his older brother led a D&D campaign. So that was the year I got into D&D. And so, you know, I started into, I mean, I didn't get into David Eddings. My brother actually, because we were moving from Virginia to Colorado Springs, my father's career Air Force, my brother actually gave me the first two books of the Belgariad for the ride, the car ride out. And so that was 1983 is when I got into David Eddings. So there was a bunch in between.
Yeah.
But pretty much during the 80s.
Sure.
There were these things called bookstores in these structures called malls.
I would go to
Walden Books in B. Dalton because they were at either end of the mall, and they had, you know, great fantasy sections and great curation. And so pretty much anything that had Del Rey on it, I was an avid reader of. And, I just picked up everything. I mean, it was crazy. So yeah, there was a roundabout trip before I got to Eddings, and then from Eddings I went into like Dennis McKiernan, who was trying to write the sequel to The Lord of the Rings, and the Tolkien estate said no. So he's like, oh, fine, I'll just do my own thing. So it's funny when you read some of the reviews, people are like, oh, he's a copycat of Tolkien. Well, he was trying to write the sequel, so of course he's a copycat of Tolkien. But so what I did is I have this pedigree of fantasy novels and series, and some I really liked and some I kind of, you know, was not happy with. And I'll pick on Robert Jordan for a little bit. And so I was dissatisfied as a reader with his series. And so when James Hunter from Shadow Alley Press approached me to write a novel, an Asian flavored, wuxia style novel, series, he said, hey, I want you to go do some exploration and come up with a proposal. And so what I did is I wanted to create a series arc that would be very satisfying to the reader, a sense of accomplishment as you go through this series. And so then that's the Silver Coin Saga. And so you had asked about the characters, and there are two main characters. The primary character is a Sean, and he's a villager, and his best friend is Cho. And Sean's father was very peaceful, and Sean was destined to be an apprentice to the herbalist. And Cho is very athletic. Think of it as the guy who's on your high school football team, if not the quarterback. And his father's the captain of the guard, and Cho is destined to go into the village guard. So he's very athletic and outgoing, where Sean is very quiet and younger. I mean, he's a year younger than his buddy Cho. Well, while they're up in the mountains harvesting mushrooms, their village gets decimated. And then they get attacked, and they get rescued by a caravan of martial magic practitioners. And so then their village is completely gone, so they basically, the caravan takes them to the school where they are offered to participate in the school. And so then they have to learn martial magic. And so that's both their first exposure to magic in any way, shape, or form are these guards that used these styles of martial magic to save them from the corrupted beasts that were attacking them. And so then the story at the school is trying to fit in. You know, you got city people, they're the villagers, you know, so then there's a little bit of, you know, minor bullying, you know, like you're stupid peasants, that kind of stuff. So then they're also, you know, imagine you go to a school where the privileged kids had been studying this stuff for a long time, and you're a little bit at a disadvantage. So they have to figure out how to catch up, how to practice, how to do this magic stuff. And, you know, the primary theme there is that a failing grade doesn't necessarily mean you survive the test. So they have to deal with the fact that there are real consequences to screwing up. And, yeah, so it's a pretty entertaining story. Okay. And then The Animals, the book I'm currently working on, is basically the second year of school. And so I based the martial magic on a real martial art, Xing Yi. I practice martial arts, and you can kind of see behind me. Yeah, I've got a Bagua sword and a Chinese broadsword on the wall. And so I wanted to set the foundation into a real martial art. So if somebody wants to go learn where the elements came from, or this year they're learning animal styles. I mean, it's the exact same progression. If you study Xing Yi, you start with the animals, then you move start with the elements, move into the animal styles. And then later on, you'll learn, you know, some advanced forms with weapons and things like that. And so this year, you know, they're trying to figure out, and I don't want to spoil the end of the first book, but somebody tries to kill them. And so this year they're trying to figure out who tried to kill them. And so they're trying to learn animal styles. They're trying to figure out who's trying to kill them and try to stay alive, right? Obviously, and pass their classes. And so then that will finish out the second book of the first trilogy arc. And then the third trilogy is where they're going to go on a quest for something that's very specific that happens at the end of book one, and kind of the arching theme of book two is, what if the history you were taught was actually a lie? And that's what they're figuring out. Yeah. So I have it set up instead of, you know, like, I don't know if you've done traditional martial arts where you go to class and you learn a new technique and you practice that technique. And
European martial arts. I've done rapier fencing. So there wasn't a lot of, learn stuff. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. We learned footwork. We learned, there was a lot of learning footwork in rapier fencing and, you know, how to keep your weapon on point, you know, not to broadcast.
Once you get past the basics, right, then you start learning very specific styles of rapier.
There's cloak and rapier, you know, dagger rapier.
Capoeira, there's Mystic Circle. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different, very advanced, very specific techniques you can learn.
Yeah, I never got that far. I only did it for like a year.
But what I'm trying to avoid in book two is having this class where they show up to class and they learn a technique. And it's,
right, I got you.
There's 10 animal forms, and that would be so boring. So in book one, I introduced this concept of an instance where they go to this test, and it's this magical construct, this place where they do a test, and then they come back out of this portal. So we do the same thing with learning the 10 animal forms. And so they're learning history as well as the animal form. And so the main character, Sean, you find out he sees something a little different. And it's because what happened at the end of book one. And I don't want to spoil, but yeah. So then it's trying to reconcile with his two close friends, with Cho and Sue. Sue being the female, main female character, and then one of their mentor people. And so, you know, trying to figure out what's going on, why is it happening, what is he seeing, and why is he seeing it. And so then the dark forces, the opposite side of the fence there, are trying to stop him from learning the truth. Yeah.
Okay. So I assume there's quite a number of fight scenes in it. Is it a challenge trying to describe, you know, martial art styles in prose?
Very. And so, you know, it's one of those where I'm trying to be as accurate as possible to be true to the martial art, but also not be true because I'm basically powering things with magic. And so there's some subtle differences, especially now that I'm in the animals, I'm kind of, you know, deviating from the core of the true Xing Yi, but it is difficult in one respect of, you know, I've been practicing martial arts for 30 years, but I haven't souped up my martial arts with magic as I'm attacking. And so then that becomes a bit of a challenge. I like to think I can do a good fight scene, but, you know, hopefully I can do a good magical fight scene.
How do you approach writing a fight scene?
So, I try to block it out. And so I'm a very visual oriented individual. And so, excuse me, you know, I try to, like, I've got a bunch of little figures here. So I'll try to block out what's happening, especially in a larger fight scene. And so what's funny is the reader magnet, which is stuck in editing right now, I wrote a story that's in between book one and book two. It's like what happens over the summer because I have a, you know, school year, right? And so during harvest, it's an agricultural school. So during the harvest, they go back to their village. And so I actually made little mini D&D sheets, and a buddy of mine and I got miniatures out, and we actually played it. We played the bad guys and the good guys and tried to do the final fight scene. So I have it chopped with pictures and what we did every round of that. So it changed what I had originally outlined when we actually play tested it, if you will. And, I think it came out with a better ending, honestly, with what happened in the D&D session. So I'm very excited about that. But yeah, I try to block it out. I try to use figures and picture angles and things like that. Because if I can't visualize it, and that's one of my big sticking points with other authors writing fight scenes, is when they do something that just doesn't make sense mechanically. A human body doesn't move like that. Or, you know, they talk about having a sword in their left hand and then the blow hits the back of the right shoulder. There is a technique you can use to do that. It's just that's not what they described. So
I try to just imagine it. I don't know. I always had good, like, 3D spatial awareness. It's why I almost became a mechanical draftsman, because I was really good at, like, I could look at a 2D drawing and picture it in a 3D pretty easily. Just
exactly.
I visualize in my head. Like, picturing angles. Like, how they're all, like, yeah. So I do try to do that to hopefully that it's realistic until, of course, there's a bunch of crazy magic always in my stuff. So.
Exactly. Realistic to a point, right?
I mean,
the physical stuff needs to be very mechanically realistic, and then the magic adds that fantastic oomph.
And I'll say one thing learning rapier fighting is that in real life, like, fights with rapiers anyways don't last long. Like, they go bad. Like, you make one mistake and you got a rapier through your chest and you're done.
Well, and it's funny if you read some of the historical accounts where those duels, I mean, they would stab each other multiple times.
Fair enough.
I mean, it's crazy.
Well, we did rapier fencing. You hit the core of the body and you were just counted as dead, right? Hit the core of the head, you know, you were dead. If you hit an arm, you had to, like, you know, pretend your arm didn't work. Like, if you lost your sword arm, you'd have to switch to your, like, offhand to keep fighting.
So did you fight in the SCA?
Yeah.
Yep, I did too.
Yeah, I did for a school project for my senior year of high school. They were like, you have to join like some club or something, and then you write a paper adjacent to it. It's like, all right, I'll do rapier fencing, and then I'll write a paper on medieval weapons. And this is back in the 90s, so I brought a bunch of I brought some weapons to school, and I didn't even think to ask, like, permission, and no one cared that I was walking around with swords.
Yeah, this now they get a little more
this
excited.
Was right before Columbine, so.
Yeah, wow.
So I was 99, yeah, so it was like right, I think maybe a week before that happened. So yeah, no one cared. But yeah, it was fun learning it. It helps me at least understand, like, because I never got very proficient, but I knew, like, I understand, like, how footwork works and how, you know, how you need a attacking from guard. Like, you always want to be guarding as you attack or you're going to get yourself killed. And you know, you see in movies where they flourish their weapons around. You're like, you're just going to get stabbed. You do that.
Yeah, but that's a whole different art, right? You know, if you look at cinematography, you know, there's things on YouTube.
Yeah.
And they're attacking the weapon, not the body, right?
Yeah, they do that all the time. Once you know that, you're like, oh, yeah, there's...
I'm a huge Errol Flynn fan. Huge Errol Flynn fan.
So, what is next for you? You got Animals coming out. Do you have anything else in the works, a different sort of project, or are you just all in on the Coin Saga?
No, so there's, you know, because I also write science fiction over for Chris Kennedy Publishing.
Okay.
My book that came out in February, Prodigal Son, it's here on my coffee cup. It came out in February. And so, I got to meet with a bunch of the other shared world creators. And so there is a series of short stories I'm having to create. One for the Salvage Universe, so that's due Wednesday. This Fallen World by Chris Woods, so that's due the end of July. And then I have a super secret fantasy project that I'm working on that will be announced at Dragon Con. And so that's a collaborative effort with four other authors. And, yeah, I'm very excited about that. So if you're going to be at Dragon Con, come to the new mythology panel.
Awesome. That sounds really great. So why don't you tell our listeners where they can connect with you on Facebook?
So
anywhere else on social media.
On Facebook, I'm Mark Stallings, author. I have a Patreon, Mark Stallings. I have a website, Mark Stallings, suspiciously. And you can find my books on Amazon under Mark Stallings.
Awesome. Well, it was really great talking with you, Mark.
It was great being on here.
Yeah. You have yourself a good one.
Well, you do. And stay cool.
Oh, I'm going to turn my fan back on. You have a good one.
All right. Goodbye.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.